It's Monday, so we've got more Kevin Durant news. Could he be walking in Memphis soon? Plus, are the Nets actually going to keep Kyrie Irving? And what exactly is a superstar in today's NBA? All that and more on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily source for all things NBA from the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network and the co-host of Locked On Nuggets, joined by David Ramil, co-host of Locked On Heat. You can follow him at DRamil13. We are the walking wounded today because both of us are extremely sick. So bear with us if you're listening to this in audio form. If you're wondering why everything is scratchy, that's why. But we're going to hammer through this. We're going to power through. We're going to have a flu game, David. We're going to keep it up. And we're going to start today with the latest news. It's nice that you and I do Mondays. We record this on Mondays for Tuesday's show in the off season because Shams Charania, such a good dude, just gives us a whole big thing every Monday about Kevin Durant for us to talk about. I think this is our fourth in a row that you and I have done together, talking about Kevin Durant based off of news. And in today's article that he posted on The Athletic, Shams did report that a new Western Conference entrant has entered the race, that while talks have stagnated with the Celtics and the Heat and the Raptors and the Suns, for the most part, that the Grizzlies have become at least brought into the idea of discussions, and that obviously there's a lot of skepticism around a deal being done. Notably, as of right now, the Grizzlies are not willing to include Jaren Jackson or Desmond Bane, but they do have five first rounders to work with. What was your reaction to the news about the Grizzlies possibly being a suitor for Kevin Durant?
Well, I thought it was really interesting. I think from everything we'd heard before, though, it seemed like a lot of teams had been calling about Kevin Durant, but he specifically names Memphis's interest there and their unwillingness to include any of those names that you mentioned. And that's where you also then have to start looking. Like, why is this news being leaked now? On whose side is it being leaked from? Probably not from Memphis's front office, because there's no need for them to mention that out there because, again, they're a team on the rise. They've got a good young core there. Why would they want that kind of news being reported regarding any of their young players being offered in a potential deal for Kevin Durant? So it's the Brooklyn side of thing, obviously, that's stirring the pot here, isn't it? Or the agents?
Yeah. So I'm a little skeptical here. We've talked about this on the show before, that a lot of the Kyrie and KD info has come from Shams' side, whereas the Nets information has largely come from Adrian Wojnarowski. I don't know Shams' sources. I'm not going to claim to know Shams' sources. But I will say that if you look beyond the surface level, here is what this looks like to me. So if you're the Nets and you're trying to drum up interest, right? You would say, you would leak, hey, we talked to Memphis. Yeah, Memphis is willing to give us five first-round picks, and we talked about Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bane. Now, talked about is a very vague term, because you could say, hey, will you guys give us Jaren Jackson or Desmond Bane? And the Grizzlies say, no, we won't do that. Guess what? You've talked about it. You've had that conversation. My read on it is that this is a play to limit the Nets' leverage. The recurring theme in the article was not all these teams want Kevin Durant. It's all these teams want Kevin Durant, but they're not willing to give up their second best player to get him. Bam Adebayo, off the table. Jaylen Brown, off the table. Like, involved, but they're not willing to give up Marcus Smart on top of it. Scottie Barnes, off the table, right? The Suns don't have anybody of that category to give, right?
You just mentioned Mikal Bridges, though. And he also goes into details about Atlanta's proposed package, too, for John Collins and DeAndre Hunter. So it's much more specified than it has been in weeks past when they do talk about these proposed deals for Durant.
It's setting a bar that is less than what the Nets want. It's basically, like, that article, to me, it reads anyway, as no one's willing to give up draft assets and
superstar,
star player, like, you're two. Like, the Hawks are a good example of this, right? To me, John Collins, DeAndre Hunter is a really good combo because I'm exceptionally high on John Collins. Like, I'm just really high on him. If you got John Collins and DeAndre Hunter and some picks, it's bad return for Kevin Durant, but it might be better than if you're not going to get Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. I don't know. I like John Collins a lot. The picks matter here. Celtics don't have as many. But it's telling to me that in all these instances, that second player is off the table. Everyone's like, yeah, we'll give you the picks, but we're not going to, like, I'm not going to give you my second best player. And like the Hawks are, like I said, an example of this where it's John Collins, but the second best player on the Hawks now is DeJounte Murray. So it's like, we're willing to give you third and, but not one of the, like the marquee superstar top of the billing guys. I think that the fact the Nets have been so quiet, I think is telling. Like, to me, they've been really quiet. That, again, a Nets report to me would indicate traction, that they would set a market with, hey, they were willing to give it. When there was a report that Jaylen Brown was at least, that was discussed.
Right.
That's a Nets, the Nets at least confirmed that to be like, yeah, okay. Because that helps them, right? It's the Celtics saying, we'll give you our second best player for KD. But the Celtics are also like, we won't give you Jaylen Brown and assets. We won't give you Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart or Robert Williams. You're not getting any of those guys. And so this is the dance that I think we continue to play here where, but I do, maybe the interesting thing here is if you assume that these kind of things are coming from the Durant Irving establishment in Brooklyn, that it's kind of notable that at least Grizzlies are on the map, and that'd be a really fascinating trade, right? Like, if you're able to get that done without including Jaren Jackson, especially, I don't think you can. But it'd be, like, a really interesting... Everyone's kind of said, like, why didn't the Grizzlies consolidate? That would be a heck of a consolidation.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I've seen the flip side of this, and I've got to say, like, maybe I've been crazy. Like, I know I had kind of sort of said, oh, why not trade Jason Tatum for Durant, because it's Kevin Durant. And I've seen Grizzlies fans saying, no way we trade Desmond Bane. And if that's the line that you're going to draw in the sand, I have no idea what the trade market is anymore, because, I mean, Bane's a fine player. Jaren Jackson, again, also a fine player. But Kevin Durant is one of a kind, generational type talents. But having said all that, if they can find a way to acquire him, absolutely, it makes him a strong contender. I've also seen the fact that it makes any potential rivalry with Golden State all that much more juicy. That would be a lot of fun to watch those two teams matching up there with KD on one side of them taking on his former teammates there.
I would say that as a Grizzlies type person, I would be I would be interested in one or the other. Right? Like, I'm not going to be like, no, you can't have Desmond Bane. I would hold out and be like, I can't give you Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bane, because then I lose defense and shooting.
Sure.
I can't lose both. If you want Bane, I'll give you Bane and whatever else you want, the picks and movable contracts and all sorts of stuff. If you want Jackson, okay. Like, I'm open to that. I'm actually open to giving you a DPOY candidate from last year, young, developing, like, star potential. Right. And the picks, but I can't give you, because it defeats the purpose of trading for Durant if you lose so much that you're no longer a contender. You have to maintain. I did think it's really funny, though, the idea of Kevin Durant winding up in a small market with a non-shooter elite athleticism point guard playing next
sounds
to
familiar.
Playing next to Steven Adams. Little familiar. And just
Serge Ibaka is still a free agent, isn't he? I don't know.
Can Desmond Bane grow a beard? That's really the question that I have for that. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back, and Shams also had a report on Kyrie Irving that I tilted my head a little bit about. We'll talk about that when we come back on Locked On NBA. But first, I've got to tell you about Rocket Money. If you keep on saying you need to make a budget but never do it, if somehow you keep missing credit card payments, if you're afraid to look at your bank statements, it's time to take back control of your financial life. Meet Rocket Money, formerly Truebill, our favorite financial app. Sick of managing your finances with buggy spreadsheets? It's time to get Rocket Money. Why did Truebill change its name to Rocket Money? Well, we'll tell you what we heard. Truebill, now backed by Rocket Companies, has grown from a bill management app into a full-on personal finance empowerment tool that helps over 3.4 million people with budgeting, lowering bills, canceling subs, and more, saving each of their members, on average, $700 a year. And with all that growth comes the next evolution in Truebill's story, a new name. Bottom line, Rocket Money is everything that we've loved about Truebill, but with a fresh look and feel. Start canceling your unused subscriptions and save money at rocketmoney.com/lockedonNBA. That's rocketmoney.com/lockedonNBA, or download the app from the App Store or Google Play Store. We'll be right back on Locked On NBA. back here on Locked On NBA. Thanks for joining us and making us part of your day and your first listen each and every day. We're free and available on platforms, including YouTube, where you can catch a live version of the show and watch David and I struggling to stay conscious for this as we're both extremely sick. The other thing I'm sick of, David, you like that transition? The other thing I'm sick of, David, is I'm sick of Kyrie Irving's just general notes about him, pretty much of any sort. But so today in it, Shams is reporting that Kyrie Irving, that teams that have called about Kyrie Irving have been told that the Nets are keeping him and that he's engaged in conversations to make this like work and productive conversations to get through the season. Okay. I already said that my lean is that a lot of this is leaned in terms of sourcing from Kyrie's side. When Kyrie tried to get traded and no one was willing, when he was testing the market and no one was willing to give him the money for the opt-out, no one was willing to give him the long-term deal because of his decision-making over the past couple of years. When he came back to the Nets, Shams reported it, and Shams basically was like, he's committed to the Nets, which is really funny because we're like, no one believes you. Like, no one believes you that he's dedicated to the Nets. And so now we have a situation where there's reporting that, oh, no, the Nets are going to keep him because the best thing for Kyrie is, it's one, to get traded to the Lakers. But if that's not possible, you know, it is to stay in Brooklyn. It's to try and figure this out and raise his value alongside Kevin Durant, try and work this out and look like he's, you know, engaged in all these types of things. If the Nets really are talking about keeping him, I don't see any point in this. Like, there's zero point in this. You either keep both of them.
Right.
And even then, like, I'll just say, like, I don't understand what the point of that is. Like, KD has said, fire the general manager and coach, or I want out. You're going to just ignore him and have this toxic locker room situation with these two guys. It doesn't make any sense to me. What do you make of the report that the Nets are trying to make it work and engage with Kyrie Irving on him staying in Brooklyn for the duration of the season?
Impossible to read. Like you said, I just can't seem to figure it out. Again, if the news is coming from Kyrie side of thing, like, what's the angle there? Like, how is it that he's maybe he's pointing it out there that he's the good team player now after years of showing quite the opposite of that? I don't see any benefit there for Kyrie to play along and be able to say that he's willing to make it work. I don't see any benefit for the team either to say that they're willing to make it work when clearly things just aren't tenable. They cannot sustain this. They have to break up this team and just haven't found a right suitor for it. So I don't know. I'm as confused as you are because we're, you know, a month away from training camp opening up here. Durant's still on the roster. Steve Nash is still the coach of this team. Sean Marks is still the general manager. Kyrie Irving's still on the roster. You haven't made a secondary trade for Ben Simmons if you're looking to acquire any other player, too. He even emphasizes, Shams does in his report, that, you know, they're confident that with Joe Harris back and everything else, this trade that they pulled off in the midseason, there in the offseason, that they're going to be a strong title contender. I don't know. That's a little dubious, perhaps. But moreover, that now all of a sudden we're willing to make it work. We're going to try to build this team around Kyrie and KD. I don't know what the heck is going on here. Like, something has to be finalized here. And I know everybody's trying to get what's best for them from the team perspective. They want to be able to get as much as they possibly can for trading either of these players. But the more time goes on, I think everybody's footing becomes weaker substantially. And everybody's losing leverage at this point. So I just don't understand why it's gone on as long as it has. And I don't know what the next step is for anybody.
I did enjoy the description from Shams of the addition of Ben Simmons with three-time All-Star.
Yeah.
Ben Simmons back in the fold.
That's right.
It's like, I mean, just some of this is just too transparent in terms of how it's being presented. If they keep Kyrie, what do you think what's the best case scenario? What's the optimum outcome? Right? Let's say they keep Kyrie, but they don't keep Kevin Durant, which to me, that makes zero sense. Right. But is it just like a fun, like in football where there's a defensive offsides and you have basically a free play, and that's kind of what you're looking at this year? Like, maybe we'll make a deep playoff run and we'll see what happens, and then we'll deal with the fallout next year. Like, I'm just trying to understand what this would look like if Kyrie is there the entire season. What's an optimum outcome?
Yeah, I guess you're right about that. As far as optimum, that doesn't seem realistic. Also, like, would Kyrie punt away the season, kind of the way he has the last couple? I mean, would he say, "Oh, I'm not sure if I want to report," or would he pull some kind of personal excuse as to why he doesn't want to be going to, practice regularly, or why doesn't he want to be traveling with a team, et cetera? Like, as far as the optimal results, then yes, I think, let's say he kind of finds new purpose in being the sole leader of this team with Durant there, with Durant gone. Everybody buys into what Kyrie is selling, which seems, again, very impossible and unlikely, but he is still a great player on the court. He's still a very, very good player, perhaps even a superstar, according to some people. And having said all that, he could guide them to a playoff spot, certainly. I think they've got a good enough team there. With or without Durant, they're certainly in contention for a playoff spot. And maybe they find a way to knock off one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference race there. Maybe a second round exit at best, and still one that's fun and confident. And you can see, oh well, we're building something here because we're going to lose Kyrie next offseason. We already lost KD, but at least we're starting to trend in the right direction. Now we've gotten rid of these two players, these head cases. We stuck to our guns. We've developed an identity. We weathered the storm, et cetera, and we're ready to move on.
That may honestly be part of the play here is just keeping the cap space open, right? If you trade Kyrie, you take on long-term contract. There's almost no chance of you getting expiring in return. And so if you just clear the cap, if you just clear it, you can be like, look, KD and Kyrie are KD and Kyrie, but you still get to live in Brooklyn. We have a good team. We have a good system. We have a good GM. You get to play in Brooklyn. We have lots of cap space. We'll pay you a max, and they can kind of go from there. It's a puzzling situation, to say the least. Also puzzling. Discussion yesterday that happened on Taylor Rook's show about what exactly the definition of a superstar. We'll get into that when we come back on Locked On NBA. Back here on Locked On NBA, thanks for joining us, making this your first listen each and every day. Thanks for joining us throughout the week. Tomorrow, you can catch John Corrales and Jake Madison. John's over at Locked On Celtics, and Jake's over at Locked On Pelicans. I was listening to Jake's schedule breakdown of the Pelicans. It was a really good episode, so make sure to check out both those guys and on Wednesday's episode of Locked On NBA. Okay, David, so Jason Tatum went on Taylor Rook's show. Taylor Rook's longtime NBA reporter, very talented, very gifted, very in the know with the players. And they were talking about a number of things. He talked about how he had a fractured wrist, which I'd actually heard during the playoffs, but it was like, oh, I heard that he's got a fractured wrist, and then he would have like 35. And I'd be like, well, I guess he doesn't. But he says that he did, which I have no reason to blame him. This happens pretty often. I don't think it's not bad. I don't think it's bad for players after in the off season after, like, don't do it the week after, but just wait and then be like, yeah, actually I was dealing with this thing. I don't think it hurts. Like, if you ask him, is that why the Warriors won the title? He'd be like, no, they beat us. Like, we weren't good enough.
Right.
But the other question was about the idea of a superstar, and Taylor's assertion was that Kyrie Irving is a superstar, but that Damian Lillard's not. And I thought that was like an interesting dynamic. And she was like, well, he's got to do it. He's got to go further, which was interesting because, like, the Blazers have made a Western Conference Finals, and Dame's won, most notably, Dame's won playoff series as the best player on the team. Like, he's won multiple playoff series as the best player on an NBA team, which, to my knowledge, Kyrie Irving has never done.
Nope.
I don't have an example of Kyrie Irving having won a playoff series where he was the best player on the team.
I don't think he's ever been to a playoff series where he's been the best player. He's the best player. Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that there was a brief window before when he got drafted, when they didn't make the playoffs, before LeBron came back in 2014. There was his not so great run in Boston where he was hurt most of the time. So, I mean, it's never happened. This idea of equating like team success to an individual player success or how you define them as a star or superstar seems kind of ludicrous to me. I don't really put much stock in team success in terms of how I analyze an individual player's strengths or their context as far as whether or not they're one of the greater players in the NBA. because so much has to break right for a team to succeed in terms of like fighting through adversity, injury, etc. It doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't think it's a reflection of how great an individual player is. And so for me, when I look at what a superstar is, again, something hard to kind of quantify or define, but to me, it's more about a player who can impact and change the course of a game single-handedly and do so consistently for a prolonged period of time. And when you look at it from that perspective, I think most superstars can do so offensively and defensively. While Dame necessarily can't do it defensively, Kyrie certainly can't do it defensively, but both of those players are so good offensively that they do change the course of the game. Like, Dame time is a very real thing. He can win a game, as you said, as being the best player on his team. And that is, at least for my definition, enough to label him a superstar. There aren't many, but I think there are enough players out there that you can see. It's like, you know what? Give him the ball. He's going to make something happen. And that's, I don't see any reason why that we wouldn't use the descriptor of superstar for a player like Dame just because they haven't won a championship. Like, they've done everything they can. The Portland rosters have mostly been flawed or hurt by injury or something like that. They've been on the opposing end. Like, you know, is Patrick Ewing not a superstar? Like, he was one of the all-time great centers, redefined the position, et cetera, at a time when the big man was so important to defining basketball, and he never won a championship. You know, that's ridiculous. Like, you can't just take him out of the conversation as a great superstar because he never won a ring, you know? So I don't know. Again, separating team success as an individual contributor who changes the course of a game on a consistent basis, by every definition, Dame Lillard fits it. And I think he's a superstar.
I think there's two different things that are interesting to talk about this. In terms of the conversation about the NBA, since we don't have games right now to actually talk about the games. The first is that the idea of superstardom and whether or not that is directly relatable to on-court success, or if it has more to do with the aura and the fame level. I tend to think a superstar is honestly more along the lines of, are you a famous...
Yeah, my co-host of Locked On Heat does the same thing. Like, he equates it with, like, jersey sales or, like, talkability, celebrity aspect of it.
Like, under that definition, Nikola Jokic isn't a superstar. He's a two-time MVP. So the question then is now, Jokic was second in front court All-Star votes, right? Mm. Pretty good. Pretty good. So people notice, but Nikola Jokic is not going to go on Good Morning America. And Nikola Jokic is not going to do, you know, Joe Rogan's podcast and or be on The Shop even, right? And there are guys who compete at a level where they're elite, but their fame doesn't necessarily translate. And I do think a lot of that's tied to market. If Dame played for the Lakers, he'd be a superstar. If Dame played for Brooklyn, he'd be a superstar. If he played for Miami, I think he'd be a superstar. I don't think he's necessarily thought of... I think that if you ask your average NBA League Pass owner, like anyone that subscribes to League Pass, is Damian Lillard a superstar? They'd be like, yeah, come on. Yes, absolutely. Because it's just a matter of, is he good enough? But that's not really how the conversation winds up getting played out in a broader... If you get outside of the hardcore NBA fans, the question is, like, does somebody's mom know them? Are they brought up, like, randomly? Are they on magazine covers? And I don't necessarily care about those things. I just personally don't. I don't know why we would care about them. Like, I care about how good they are. The difference between superstar and star, I think, is pretty fascinating from that standpoint. If we do ascribe superstardom to player talent, you mentioned you're like, there's not a lot of them. That, I think, gets into some of this, is whether or not you're somebody that wants to give so many good players credit, or if you're like, I want to be discerning and only hold this label for a handful of guys, right? Like, LeBron's a superstar, and Kevin Durant's a superstar, and...
Is he?
And is Joel...
Is he?
And
I'm not trying to be difficult, because we had this conversation on Locked On. Is he? Like, I don't even know that he's a name that your casual peripheral fan knows anymore. And, like, he's so, Well, grumpy, like hard to like. I mean, forcing his way out of Oklahoma City, whatever, which I have never complained about. You know, it always seemed like he was a secondary player to Steph Curry. Like now the last couple of years with injury, like I don't know that he has the Q rating for all that. And so I just think if you're gonna start quantifying celebrity status, I don't know that he fits the bill.
But I think that's an interesting point, because what you're talking about is not fame, it's popularity. So you can be famous without being popular, and that's what I think KD is. I don't think KD is popular right now. I think most people are like, come on, man, like just go win somewhere. Like you could be one of the five best players of all time. You're a 7 foot 50 40 90 shooter. You're insanely good. Why is all of this, like, why are you constantly having issues with these places that you where you have all this versus, I think Dame actually suffers from the opposite, which is like Dame everyone like just does his job and wants to be in Portland and is committed to the franchise and has made those decisions and has been incredibly loyal, you know, and that I think has probably hurt his fame, but it's made him more popular, because I think that he's a very popular player because everybody's like, he stays there, you know, he's done the thing for Portland. Yeah, loyalty, like all those types of things. But because he doesn't play in a large market, less fame. And a lot of that gets into, you know, bigger questions about what you value, which is, do you want a legacy or do you want the money? You don't have to choose. Sometimes you can have both, but sometimes you have to choose between those two things in varying degrees. And I think that's like a fascinating kind of counter juxtaposition. It's interesting that you think that KD is not a superstar. Not wrong.
No.
Like I can see the idea.
I personally do. I absolutely do.
But you think it's worth asking?
I think there's an argument to be made. Like we had this discussion, and I hate to tie it back to Miami, but like, is Jimmy Butler viewed as a superstar? Like, you know, top 10, 15-ish player in the NBA, very good during playoff runs, has a Michelob Light commercial, marketable, charming, has a social media following, etc. Do you view him as a superstar? Kind of, sort of. I do, personally. Yeah. But again, maybe I have a much more open definition than most people do. And he still hasn't won anything, so I imagine Taylor Rooks doesn't think he's a superstar, but... Right. I don't know. Like that.
Like LaMelo, but here's what's interesting is like LaMelo Ball's not a superstar.
Yeah.
But like, I have a hard time believing that even by Taylor's definition that you wouldn't say Luka is, and Luka hasn't done anything.
Carmelo Anthony.
So, like, yeah.
I mean, all time great, hasn't won anything, et cetera.
Chris Paul never won a title. It's Chris Paul, like Chris Paul with all those advertisements. So that those differences between the two, I think, is an interesting discussion. And this gets it just into where the NBA sits in the landscape of society, of culture.
Right.
That you can be a very, and this is where Kyrie comes in. Kyrie's very prominent in NBA culture, despite not being very prominent in terms of his actual NBA winning contribution. He actually hasn't done that much. He had an amazing three games in June of 2016. Really phenomenal. Hit a very big shot. But other than that, I think if you look at the broad spectrum of his career, I think you'd be hard pressed to find the argument to hold that he's been that impactful. All right, let's go wrap it up for Locked On NBA. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Make sure to rate, review, subscribe. Come back tomorrow for Jake Madison and John Corrales, as well as all the guests throughout the week and hosts on Locked On NBA. You can follow us on Twitter, Locked On NBA Pods. For David Ramil, who's at DRamil13, DRAMIL13. I'm Matt Moore. We're both going to go lay down for a while. We'll see you guys again next time on Locked On NBA.